Welcome, and thank you for checking in at the Inner Game of Change podcast, where I focus on exploring the multi-layers of managing organizational change. My name is Ali Jama, and you're listening to the Inner Game of Change podcast. My guest today is Lydia Musa, an author, global transformation consultant with a PhD in change implementation, and the founder of the Change Hub. As an expert in change implementation, Lydia combines knowledge and evidence from her research to help business achieve successful human-centered transformational change. In this episode, as well as chatting about her upcoming book, Lydia and I chat about effective change implementation as key part of the change cycle to help business navigate through the change, often messy middle. I'm grateful to have Lydia chatting with me today. So Lydia, thank you so much for your time. I am very excited about meeting you today. We are going to talk about a couple of things, but fantastic to have you with me today, Lydia.
Thank you for having me, Ali. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. So welcome to the Inner Game of Change podcast. But before we go into the topic, and today is going to be all about implementation. Before we dive into it, Lydia, it would be fantastic if you can introduce yourself to my listeners.
Thank you, Ali. So my name is Lydia Musa, and I am a change specialist. I've been working in change for over 10 years, and I've done my PhD in change implementation in the implementation of innovation in healthcare practice. And from the research that we did, I found that there was a lot of, commonalities for healthcare in terms of the strategies, because we're dealing with humans in any industry, which we were able to apply across the various industries. So I also run a business which is called The Change Hub, and the aim of that is to help with training around change, as well as facilitating change, the co-design of change, as well as a change platform as well, which has a whole bunch of change resources for change specialists. So that's me in a nutshell. I guess change has been ingrained in me since a very young age. So I've moved across 4 different countries, 7 schools growing up, changed my career as well. And sometimes it wasn't that great, but eventually you learn to embrace it and look for the opportunities that it brings rather than just looking at what it takes away. So I've embraced it so much that I made a career out of it.
Fantastic. I think we have a lot of in common because I'm a migrant as well. So I lived in many countries, and yeah, it definitely gives you a perspective about the uncertainty and the unknown can be far more exciting than the known. So we're talking about potential here. So well done, Lydia. And healthcare, what made you do your study on the healthcare sector?
So my background before I got into change, I was a pharmacist once upon a time. So that after being in pharmacy for a little while, I got into change and facilitation in the healthcare industry because of pharmacy, and was offered to do a scholarship for my PhD in pharmacy practice.
Wonderful.
So I looked at all of healthcare, but again, as I mentioned, the strategies were so streamlined that now I also teach the change aspect in the MBA at UTS as well, the executive MBA. So it applies anywhere, as we know. Change managers can go from one industry to another. But it was really interesting in healthcare because there are also some really key change barriers, implementation barriers in there. So it was really interesting to do it in healthcare and dive a bit deeper into the literature around information diffusion, change implementation, implementation science, and all of that. So it gave me a really good perspective and a different approach to traditional change management.
Wonderful. I had a taste of working in the health sector and the aged care and retirement villages and home care services in one of my contracts with the client. So very complicated world. Now, I want to ask you the first question. How important is the change implementation in a change cycle when we actually talk about change management?
Yeah. So I guess when you look at change, it can start at any point. So What I've done through the research is looked at the different strategies and what actually works and what doesn't. And we did a data analytics around that. We did a quantitative and qualitative analysis of a two-year study. Now, implementation is a very big word, and it encompasses a lot of things. So in implementation science, there are various areas within implementation science that we can look at. One part of those is to explore the existing change factors. Now, factors can be barriers or enablers. So, for example, let's say communication. You come in and you see that communication is actually really good in an organization. That becomes a change enabler. So you utilize the communication to help with the change. But other things you'll find that are actually barriers. So it could be leadership engagement and role modeling. It could be existing resources or processes and so on. Mm-hmm. So implementation encompasses so much. So there's the aspect of the exploration of those factors. There's also about establishing the correct strategies around those particular factors. So sometimes, unfortunately, what I see is that we'll go in and then a set of strategies is implemented regardless of the setting.
Yes.
So you go, you do this, 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 and this. Unfortunately, that doesn't really work in when there is so much complexity and variation from one, not just industry to another, but also one setting and one, for example, organization to another, even within the same industry. So what we often miss is that exploration of those particular factors associated with that setting. So once we explore that and we also establish the strategies related to that, we also need that evaluation aspect. In the framework that we developed, those three areas are really critical for implementation. However, we also cannot exclude adoption. Adoption is at the heart of implementation.
Yes.
Unfortunately, again, we focus so much on implement, that we don't look at the adoption part as much. So adoption's at the heart. So in the framework that we've developed, again, so you have there's three principles of implementation: to explore, establish, and evaluate. But also then the adoption is at the heart and works all the way through those three areas, which is to engage, empower, and equip those stakeholders. And when we talk about engage, it's not just at the start and, you know, you tell them and get their buy-in and then go.
Yes.
It's about continuous engagement throughout the entire change. And when we talk about empower, it's not just let's empower them to make the changes. No, it's actually empower them to plan for the changes and co-design the changes right from the start. Because if I'm empowered, then I'm more likely to adopt, and then also equipping. So we can't just engage and empower and say, all right, you guys go for it. We have to equip them with the capabilities and resources they require.
You mentioned an important point. I think it was Dr. Fuda, who's actually Australian, who said change is not the goal. The goal is the goal. And so the idea of implementing something that is not the goal is the adoption and what happens after the adoption. And that's what needs to go hand in hand, not just the implementation. The workplace nowadays is a complex setting. Implementation can be messy. How can we avoid this mess? What do we need to do?
To be honest with you, we can't avoid the mess. We need to embrace the mess.
Good,
and unleash the mess.
Yes.
Right? So I always use this analogy of a cupboard, right? A messy cupboard.
Mm.
We all have one of those cupboards at home. So a cupboard is messy and you walk past it and it irritates you every time, but you just leave it there because, what, you know, it works, you know, it holds things. So eventually there comes a point where you're like, I've had enough, or maybe you're moving out and you have to. So you go in and you have to fix this messy cupboard or take everything out. So the first thing that you do is you unleash the mess, right? You face it and you have to unleash it. You have to take it all out, all the expired stuff, all the useless things that have been there and broken things. You take it all out. If we don't do that, then we're just doing Band-Aid solutions. We're just shuffling things and hoping that it will work. But we know it's not really the greatest way of doing things. So I always say unleash the chaos that comes with change, embrace it, navigate it, because only when we face it and understand it, then we can actually unleash a lot of the strengths that we have that we've kept hidden for so long. We also can unleash all of the mess that's contributing to potential toxicity or potentially the incorrect processes and the mindset that, you know, kind of fixed mindset around doing things. So we have to unleash that mess, navigate it, which obviously takes a lot more time than those neat little band-aid solutions. But in order for us to do that, we really need to be able to face it and make the time for it and be open to what comes out, because sometimes we're not going to be happy with what comes out, but we have to just be able to deal with it, be transparent enough with our people to say, you know what, this is what we're faced with. So how do we then navigate it and work towards that goal that you mentioned? Unleash the mess, I say.
and that transparency is really critical, because we don't have all the answers. We've got a fair idea about where we want to go. But as long as we let the business or the stakeholders know that it's not going to be a linear process, they might be, the middle is always going to be messy. However, with the messiness, what we promise is that we will work together, we will offer the support. These are the things that are actually within our control. If you want to go from A to B in your car, you will know the A, you will know the B and your final destination, but there will be U-turns, there will be traffic jam, there will be lots of things on the way, which you can't really, you know, factor in. Even with the best change impact analysis, there's always going to be, in fact, I've read an article that there are impacts and consequences of a change that you won't see until probably 12 to 24 months down the track. So nobody will see that. But you just mentioned the word transparency, and that is really critical when we plan and design our change plans. As change practitioners, are we guilty of sometimes complicating things?
I guess we maybe put too many tables and fill out too many things.
Yes.
Whereas what we could potentially be doing is actually that engagement, empowerment, and equipping at that time. So sure. I think sometimes it's robotically done, to be honest. This is something I've spoken to hundreds of change managers about. It's sometimes done for the sake of doing a change, an impact assessment, or a change plan or a training plan. But what we often miss out on is the actual transformation aspect and really engaging people throughout that process. A lot of people feel that it is a tick box approach traditionally, and we need to move away from that really and actually start engaging with the people and truly understanding what those implementation factors are. And they won't be according to a 5-step model, like you said, or an 8-step model or a linear approach, because nothing about change is linear. So we can't go a step one, step two. We certainly need a framework to work with, because we need to have something, a systematic approach, but a framework that allows us to navigate the different complexities of all of those different settings that we go into. So this is why I always say, yes, have a framework, and we've got the framework, publish the framework. However, it's about how you navigate that. That is different in every single scenario, and the outcome will be different in every scenario.
Yep.
So the barriers will be different. It's about tailoring it to that setting.
Yeah, fantastic. It should be really about a purpose-driven activity or set of activities that will give you the richness and the insight that you need, so it can enable the business to move from A to B, rather than busy for the sake of and ticking, as you mentioned, ticking the boxes. So we need to tailor our approach based on the context and the environment as well. And that comes back with experience sometimes, Lydia. And it also comes through listening to a podcast like this. Change has got many layers that we need to understand. And it's not a straightforward job. When you deal with process, business, and people, it's quite complex, or it can be complex as well. I call it, we are in the change economy right now. It's everything about change. From your experience, what do we need to do to elevate the principle of that change management is key to a success of a project? And at the same time, there needs to be a level of patience around the implementation side of things. So we can't just say go alive and that's it and everything is done. What's your advice or what's your insight based on your experience?
So it's around, have we actually properly engaged and empowered and equipped those that will be impacted by this change before we go live? And in doing so, when we do go live, I always like to say, you know, instead of go live, it's go live it.
Yeah. Right. So that's a good way of saying it.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yeah. Go and utilize the people instead of having this go live and then that's done, you're out. It's actually go live it with the people. What is their feedback? What works? What doesn't? And this goes really well with, you know, agile methodologies where, you know, it's iterative. You have the feedback loop. You have that engagement and that, you know, really making sure the right people understand what's happening and also are involved in bringing that change to life. So I'm always kind of, because let's be serious, I'm sure they say 70% of projects fail, and that statistic is still true till this day. In most of the projects that you might have worked on, or anyone that has worked on, how much has it actually, you know, been implemented on that go live day and with no issues thereafter? You know, it's very, very minimal. But the way to avoid that is to make sure that they're, you know, who is setting this go live date as well. Like, this is usually done at the start when there is nothing that happened with the impacted stakeholders, right? So it's almost like, you know, we have, and it's this saying of, you know, build it and they will come. Get them to build it and they will stay. Because that's the issue. Like, someone sets these timeframes and these budgets without taking into consideration the impacted stakeholders. And by then it's too late because it's gone live. And then they live it and it's like, it's not what we wanted. And so you go back to the drawing board. So it's really important, even if we're using agile methodologies or iterative processes, to make sure that all of the impacted stakeholders actually have a say and know what's going on early on. There's another concept that this ta-da moment, right? Ta-da moment, what that does to humans, us humans in the neuroscience, is that we fight, flee, or freeze because we don't like surprises as part of our survival instincts. So when you show me something at a go live that's I've never known or I've never been part of, or even if I knew a little bit about the impact assessment and the training, I haven't lived it yet, this gives that response. So just get people to really live it before set and forget.
Go live it. That can be a title for a book, Lydia. So you mentioned a couple of things, and I completely agree. Look, research tells us a lot and experience tells us a lot that resistance does happen actually at the implementation stage. That's when your highest resistance happens. The go live it is not the goal, is actually what happens after. And the importance of a change manager having a seat at the table early in the piece to really navigate through, is that going to be a reasonable time for a go live date? Because it's usually driven by a business case and driven by the project management team. And that comes by experience and credibility that you build as a change practitioner, whether the business will actually listen to you or not. Again, if you do the due diligence and find and show your evidence that moving a go live by 3 weeks will benefit the stakeholders, the business, and the adoption rate, then that's a lot of work, but it's actually worth doing it.
That's correct.
I know that you are writing a book. Well, actually, you probably finished, but I know you're going to publish a book. And I'm curious for my listeners to know about your book.
Yes, so final bits of editing, and it's about to go to the publisher. So the book is called Navigating the Chaos of Change.
Of course.
So that, yes.
Very appropriate, yes.
The idea is that change is messy, and it's that's totally fine. So in the book, I explore the neuroscience of us as humans when it comes to change, as well as go through that framework and those principles with examples of real life scenarios of how that has worked, and also making sure that we understand, things like implementation science, understand that it's not so linear, it's so multifactorial, and how to navigate that chaos essentially. So
wonderful.
Yes, it should be out in October.
That's wonderful. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to have you back at some stage to talk about that particular book, and I look forward to reading it. So, but first things first, it's a fantastic effort and well done. I can't imagine the effort that goes into writing a book. So, one last question I want to ask you, and we are coming to the end of the podcast, Lydia, and I'm enjoying the conversation. What is your advice to the current change practice community?
So for me, it's, less management and more facilitation. I know it's in the title, which is unfortunate, change manager.
Yeah.
But to think of ourselves as facilitators, practitioners and facilitators, but facilitation gives you the idea that and the skill to facilitate whatever comes. So you become more flexible, you become more tailored, you really truly listen and facilitate according to the needs of that environment instead of managing or trying to control. Because again, when we talk about chaos, we can't manage or control that chaos, but it's about navigating and facilitating it. Think of it, going from a, the street directory, where it's follow this, follow this, to a sat nav, right?
Yes.
It's much more dynamic. It's much more flexible. It takes into consideration the roadblocks and reroutes you. So really, we need to adopt that mindset as change practitioners and to become more facilitative and really do what we're meant to be doing, which is the people aspect of change, right? And stop turning ourselves into managing or, people managing and ticking those boxes. That's probably the biggest thing that I can definitely, and use a framework rather than a step-by-step approach. Because again, frameworks by nature are much more dynamic and you are able to tailor them according to the setting.
Fantastic. The sat-nav is a fascinating thing. Especially when it does recalibration and rerouting. And that's actually the closest science. And I was reading an article a few months ago that even the motivational speakers talk about the sat-nav in terms of creating a mindset that can adjust and adapt to the current environment. And the sat-nav is the closest to somebody who can really call themselves adaptive. You also mentioned that we need to move away from management to facilitation. I would think we need to move away from management to enabling. So I'm an enabler of change. I'm also an influencer and a relationship builder, because only through building the relationships, then you can have a point that people can listen to and actually can heed as well. And the idea of using a framework is fantastic, because it's messy and step by step is not going to cut it. I mean, you can have a go, but the outcomes will be very ordinary, which will contribute to the misconception sometimes about change management, that we're not adding a lot of value that we claim we are adding. Mind you, the I don't know about your experience, but my experience is that businesses are getting the sense of the value of change management now. Way better than before. I also believe that 70th, the projects actually fail. I'm just not too sure how accurate that number is. I think workplace nowadays is probably far more open to accepting changes. Maybe again because of COVID, maybe because we are making an impact on the market. I've got absolutely no idea what that is. But from my experience is that businesses are slightly more open now to accepting changes. It's our role to enable them to move, as you said, through the sat-nav and all of that. So it's been a pleasure having you, Lydia, in my podcast. How would people reach out to you?
Thank you, Ali, for having me. And I guess my website is thechangehub.com.au, or they can connect on LinkedIn as well, Lydia Musa. And again, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to speak with you. And looking forward to catching up again.
Fantastic. And thank you again for being my guest at the In a Game of Change podcast. Lydia, until next time, stay well and stay safe.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. To know more about my guests and this podcast, check the innergameofchange.com.au website. And remember to subscribe. I can't wait to share with you my next episode. Until then, stay well and stay safe.